Hello.
Hello.
I moved my microphone closer to my mouth.
Does that make your voice deeper?
Does it sound better?
No. I honestly can't tell you the difference. I'm just waiting for you to brush up against the microphone with your beard hair, like usual.
I already did. I need to trim it up. I was gonna do that today. Maybe I'll do that after this.
Yeah. I mean, occasionally you hear it in the podcast. It adds some flair. It lets you know that you're listening to a recording and not just a conversation that two people are having.
Well, I guess not breaks. It sets up a fourth wall so you know that you're not actually involved in it.
Yes. We're all about barriers here. But the important part of this is of course this is the third time I've talked to you this week, which is unusual, because you were in town for a hot minute.
Oh, right. We didn't
And
record that one, though.
no, thank God. And then mostly because there was bathroom discussion, and other
Why?
things.
I
I don't
didn't
know.
intend for that
No.
to occur.
No.
I didn't bring it up.
Nobody intended for. I mean, it's just an unfortunate thing that
When
happens apparently when you get all of us together.
we all get together and we drink too
Yeah.
much.
No, but then we recorded our member special last night with Micah Sargent. And that's going to be coming out very shortly. And I have been very entertained while I've been listening back to it. I've been taking my time on this one because there's some crosstalk where I've got a
Some industry term there, crosstalk.
yeah. That's what happens when you get three people on a podcast together and there's some, I guess, slight latency.
Yeah, there was some lag. There was a little bit of staticky Skypiness that I could hear, but you do your best. I mean, you can never really recreate the chemistry of people in the same room together because it's really a lot easier to anticipate who's going to say what when, but you know.
Yeah. Also, the important, the really great part is the part that I can't edit. When Micah played "Party All the Time" on YouTube, and it played into his recording, so and into all of ours because it was on the Skype call. So I have nothing to really do with that. It doesn't go on
Yeah.
for very long, but
To be fair, you
yeah.
shouldn't edit out Party All the Time anyway, because it's a masterpiece.
Yeah, no, I maybe would have turned it into more of a music bed, so you could hear Micah instead of just him shouting over the din of "Party All the Time."
He just needs to adjust his levels, you're saying.
Well, there's just nothing I could do to adjust it, but it's very brief. It's very brief. It's very entertaining, especially with the other soundboard stuff that comes into play that Micah helpfully brought. Just in case you're like, oh no, audio problems. It's like,
No,
no,
it's
audio
intentional.
benefits.
Benefits.
Yes. Well, I mean, it improved, is what I'm saying.
Sure.
Yes.
Sure.
But I hope that if you're listening to this and you're not already a member, that you will consider becoming a member of the fine incomparable network, and you can check the boxes for the shows and things. I promise I'll stop bothering everyone about that very shortly. We're not gonna ramble quite as much.
It's almost like it's membership month, and this is the month and the year when we promote the memberships for the Incomparable, the network upon which this podcast is hosted.
Yeah, and we don't have any ads. Well, any real ones.
No ads that actually pay us.
Yeah, so
I'm not getting kickbacks from Big Sourdough Lobby.
you're not getting a kickback from Big Mattress.
I could use a new mattress, to be honest with you.
Oh, already? I thought you just got the mattress.
Well, it's a couple years old, but here's the thing. I'm a very old man, and I have back problems. So, a couple months ago, we purchased one of those old people things you watch in late night infomercials that adjust the bed in multiple tilty ways.
Oh no.
You got your head tilts, you got your lumbar tilts, you got your leg tilts,
Wait,
and
can you do that like lazy boy position with it?
I believe the position you're referring to is called zero gravity. And yes, I have a zero gravity butt. Not only does... Okay, so he sold us on a nice one because we kind of wanted like the lumbar support and the individual adjustability. But okay, where to start with this story? Anyway, it has separate side adjustability, but we haven't replaced the mattress yet with a split mattress. So we currently have to maintain the same adjustability. So I would like a split mattress so I can be in what I refer to as hammock mode while Amanda lays more flat. But in addition to the presets for hammock mode and other type things on this this remote control, apparently this new one it has a massage feature,
which is
very not good because like all of the electronics underneath it kind of rattle when you turn it on, so it sounds like an earthquake. I imagine in Los Angeles, but. It also had a button on the back of the remote that's got a little light on it. It's like, oh, is that for lighting up the buttons? It's like, no. You just hit a button and the buttons light up with a little backlight so you can see what you're doing in the dark. He's like, no, that's in case, you know, you need to get up in the middle of the night and go to the bathroom or go do whatever. You hit that and a soft light projects from underneath the bed so you can see what you're doing. And I was like, oh, that's fine. I'm never going to use that feature. But what he neglected to mention is that there are six different colored lights. So basically, I can sleep in like an EDM dance floor. Like it goes like red, blue, green, yellow, just like regular white color. And you have to cycle through all of these every time you accidentally hit that button on the back of the remote.
Oh, wow. I have a vaporizer that's kind of like that.
Old man EDM gear.
No, oh no, it's a
humidifier.
No, it's not the humidifier. It's the one that does the. Oh, it's diffuser. That's what I was thinking of. Not a vaporizer. So it's one of those
the ones that smell nice that shoot the little stream of stuff up in the air.
Yes.
Yeah, we got one of those
for your essential oils.
For the essential oils, yes.
And it's got a light on it. That if you turn it on, just cycles. But then if you hit it again, it'll stop on a color. And then if you keep hitting it. Then you can manually cycle through the colors.
Yes.
So it's very specific, except for the part where you can't like pick a favorite, and you also have to do this process if you want that to happen. So it's a little irritating.
Well, I think the point is that you match the color with the given mood of the essential oil at any given time.
Yeah. I wonder if there's a real fancy pants one that's like, you know, I don't know, Philips Hue. Do they have a Philips Hue?
a connected one?
Yeah, for my smart home.
My bed has an app that basically mirrors the remote control, but in a much more poor fashion. It's terrible. It's about as bad as Samsung's app for controlling its TVs. It's just useless. But I imagine you can get an essential oil diffuser that also is controllable by an app.
Hmm.
Yeah,
well, that's nice, I guess. But yeah. So hammock mode.
Hammock mode. I enjoy hammock mode.
What is a hammock mode?
Well, it elevates the head a bit. It elevates the feet a little bit, such that you're just if it feels like you're reclining in a hammock. You're kind of a little bit in the a fetal position, but on your back.
Okay. Another question.
Mm-hmm.
If you're getting a split mattress, does that mean you also need to get those like twin? Sheets so that you have separate sheets and there's going to be a visible line between your bed and Amanda's?
Well, apparently this is a thing now, like, what is it called? They're called Twin XL or something. So it's basically a California King or just a regular King mattress that they just make in two. But yeah, if you're one of those people that likes to roll all around the bed, you can get one of those stupid little foam things that kind of bridges the gap. But, the King mattress is wide enough such that we don't really cross that like center line just arbitrarily rolling around. So I don't know that that's really an issue. And then the blankets and stuff should be fine.
I'm just trying to get a mental image of this divided bed.
The fewer mental images you have of our sleeping arrangement, the better. No, the beds, you know, when they're flat, they're side by side and it looks like any other bed. It's just that you can tilt up and down individually.
Okay. Yeah, it seems, as you alluded to earlier.
It's not I Love Lucy. They're not like on opposite sides of the room.
It just seemed very old man. I guess that's the vibe for you these days.
I decided this year that if there's anything I can do to improve my sleep health, you know, short of like going to bed on time and not drinking alcohol and not doing any of those weird sleep tracking things with my watch, because I'm not going to do any of that crap, I'm willing to give it a try so I can sleep better. So there's that.
Okay. That's acceptable.
I like sleep. I like better sleep. Mm-hmm. I have a bad back. I would like to get better sleep.
My back's not great either. But I found that it has less to do with the sleep surface so much as the time allotted for sleep. My general stress level, because there's nothing that I can seem to do when I'm feeling a little stressed to sleep calmly and serenely through the night, because I'll just toss and turn, or I'll wake up in the middle of the night, 3 a.m, and then not be able to go back to sleep, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So if only there was a product you could buy for that.
There was a little bit of a product you can buy for that, but you have to use it in moderation. It's called alcohol. And if you consume enough of it such that you don't move while you're asleep, you're okay, because, you know, your body's not like moving from different position to position, and you can just lay flat on your back and sleep. Because I can't sleep on my back. I am incapable of sleeping flat on my back. I like choke on my tongue and just can't breathe and stuff. Particularly why I like hammock mode, because it's a little easier to breathe and lay on your back, because I can't do it flat. I'm a side sleeper, which does not go well for my lumpy, deformed collarbone and or my old man back. So there's that.
So just a general question then. Have you considered that maybe you have something like, you know, sleep apnea or some other?
No, I don't have sleep apnea. I have a bulging disc in my spine.
Oh. Interesting.
So there's that. No, it's just I don't know, I just like, I have never been able to find a pillow that is flat enough that my hands don't go numb and high enough that I don't like choke on my tongue.
Well, that's
I have spent a lot of time on this, and I have gotten very angry at the wire cutter for its terrible recommendation. No, Sweet Home, whatever the hell, whichever one recommends the pillows, they're very bad.
I don't believe anything that I see on that website. I will look at it to see the like what they reviewed and how they reviewed it, and then I will completely omit whatever their recommendation is, because sometimes they just weight things in a very specific way for their personal tastes, or they seem to undervalue something that I value highly. So I can't really just like trust them implicitly. And I'm not implying that they're like crooked or anything. They just, I don't know. They don't really seem to like do it all. And I don't agree. So,
well, I can tell you that their recommended pillows are so bad that they will make you feel like you're a crazy person. They're so bad.
Now, are those the recommended pillows that are made of, let's say, wheat hulls?
There's some sort of, I forget what they are. There's some sort of like made out of some organic bullshit, crushed up like meshy type thing inside of a. It's like a foam, but it's not a foam. It's like cut up foam, so you can move it around and it, whatever. Regardless, the pillow is basically like 11 inches tall, and you can sink maybe about 3 inches down in it. But basically, if you're laying on your back on this pillow, your hands and legs will go numb because you are pinching your spinal cord, because it is so tall and so rock hard.
See, I had seen this, now that you've mentioned it, I've seen this very same review, because I was looking for a new pillow, and then I decided to just not. Because
And they have one that's like, it's like 3/4 of the height. It's like better for side sleepers. And it's like, this is still impossibly large. I have tried them all. They're very bad. You know, Amanda makes fun of me for it, but the pillow that I am capable of sleeping on is incredibly old and probably very gross, but it has been just like flattened by decades of having been slept on. And it's the only thing that is the appropriate height for me to lay on without my limbs going numb.
Yeah,
I hate it.
I've got, because I was considering the one that they recommend for side sleepers, because I, again, I don't agree with what they had said for the other one. But I didn't want to make the investment because I think it was also like $60 per pillow.
Yep. Yep.
And I'm someone who needs to have matching pillows in my life. I'm not going to buy one pillow. And then so I don't want to be out $120 and then hate the pillow.
They're also incredibly heavy because of these weird foam things. They probably weigh like 10 pounds.
Yeah, weird.
But yeah, you're right. They are costly. I got one for Amanda, I think, for Christmas. And then basically she was like, she thought she couldn't adjust to it or something was wrong with it. And it just, she wasn't helping her sleep. And I was like, you know, give it a couple more nights try or whatever. And for like a week, she was miserable. And then she gave it to me. She's like, I don't know what the deal is with this thing. Like, I can't deal with it. It's lay on it if you want it. And I slept on it for one night and my fingers went numb. And I'm like, nope, that is a pinched spinal cord. What the hell is wrong with this thing? I immediately sent it back to them. I'm like, this is horrifying. Get this thing out of my house.
Yeah. And I mean, I have... as uncool as it is to admit, I've had the most success with the Laura Ashley pillows that they have at Bed Bath & Beyond, although I don't think they carry Laura Ashley anymore. But yeah, it was just like, you know, pretty cheap-ish. I think it was like $20, but it wasn't like, there's nothing fancy about it. And it's the artificial filler, whatever, so I'm sure it's carcinogenic, but I don't really like down.
The little feathers all over the place, you don't need any of that.
No,
the thing that I'm searching for is something in between the two awful pillows you get at hotels. You get that one that's like a fake down that is like it may as well be like empty. There's basically nothing in it. When you lay on it, your head touches the mattress, you just sink through it. And then they have the other one that is, I don't know, filled with the cotton from like disused teddy bears or something. It's like very spongy and also very tall, but like something between those two is perfect, which means I basically end up with the smaller one and I end up mashing it till it's like 6 inches wide, so all of the little tiny bit of whatever's in there is just supporting me appropriately. But I cannot find a pillow to save my life. Like somebody come in here and disrupt this. And like fix it. Oh, and no, not Casper, because I got one of their pillows and it sucked too.
Maybe you should. I wonder if there probably is a company where they like mold a pillow form shape to your person.
I think that's the wrong path though. I think you need a pillow that is more flexible. And one of the other things when I'm trying all of these stupid fancy pillows, you can get the king size pillow or you can get the regular size pillow, and the regular size one usually saves you $20 or whatever the hell it is, and I usually go with that one just to try it out. But I think you need the wider one such that you can push the foam around further to just, you know, balance it to your needs better. And I haven't tried that yet, so it's just I got so turned off of all of the different pillows that we tried that I just gave up and went back to my old flat pillow for now. But one of these days, I will re-engage with the pillow marketplace, and I will find something that works.
The other thing I would say is that I bought like a cheap pillow for I had some family members that were coming over to stay in my incredibly tiny apartment. It's not something I recommend, which is why I don't offer it to anyone who comes to town to visit, because it's so small, tiny apartment. But I picked
so you're
up
saying
the,
I shouldn't come stay with you.
No, please never. But the go stay at Casa Del Mar. But the pillow.
Oh, yeah, I can just do that whenever I feel like it.
Yeah, I mean,
very fancy.
It's incredibly affordable. But the pillow.
Oh, I have complaints about them as well.
Oh, the pillow that I got for the guest, since obviously I didn't have extra, was just a Target where I just like grabbed something that was cheap. It was like $7, and then it turned out to be actually a fairly comfy pillow, surprisingly. But it is a situation where you have to mush it into a shape. It does not have enough filler in it for you to just like plop down on top of it. It just flattens out.
I think that's the way to go though. I think people are overthinking this pillow thing, and they are solving for X, but really other people out there may want Y. So I'll offer some variability is what I'm saying.
Well, I feel like there's a lot of variability and there are a lot of options in the pillow market. You're sick of it.
You need a single pillow that offers you multi variations in its setup.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't matter. I need to figure out how to sleep on my back, to be honest. for a little while, when my back was really bad, like, I literally have to sleep on my back when it's super screwed up. And the only way I could get my head to the height that, like, it didn't hurt my neck was to get a relatively good size fluffy bath towel and fold it such that it was the perfect height, and then I could put that underneath my head. So I slept on a bath towel for a little while. It's not very forgiving, but it's the right height so that I can, like, breathe and my hands don't go numb.
Oh. But I would say, as a follow-up to that, I need to buy a chair for when I'm recording.
Oh, boy.
Because I've been using my dining room chairs, which are just the cheap, like, Parsons-style dining chairs that came with my dining set in 2006, I want to say. And because I bought it after I moved into the apartment. Originally, there was no furniture. I used the TV box as a dining room table because I had nothing.
You used the TV box?
Yes, the,
like,
box
horizontally
the TV
came on top of another box?
No, just like I would sit on the floor with this elevated gourmet table of a TV box.
But TV boxes are thin.
Yes.
So your food was a good, like, 6 inches off the floor.
Eight ish. It was actually a fairly substantial box, considering it was such a tiny television. It was a Magnavox 27-inch LCD television that was a... No,
a CRT box could make a good coffee table.
Well, I mean, this was a temporary thing. It just turned out to be longer than I had expected because I was trying to figure out what dining room table I wanted. Because it's also, as I said, weird small apartment, so I need to be a round one, and I didn't like a lot of the round ones because some of the round ones are, like, so tiny that you can barely put... they will have, like, chairs for four people around it, but it's like, how would you even, like, put the food and the drinks and everything, because they're so teeny tiny. But then
another thing we're trying to solve, finding round tables that can seat, I don't know, an appropriate amount of people and, like, also not be massive.
Yeah, so anyway, I got that all sorted, but this chair is not meant for long podcast recording sessions. And so frequently at the end of this, after I'm stooped over talking into this microphone so that people can hear me, and then I straighten my back out and then stand up at the end, I'm just in incredible pain.
Have you considered elevating the microphone better? Maybe getting a boom arm clamped onto your table?
Yeah, but I don't think that's going to help with this chair because, again, it's also a bad chair.
No, it won't help. I mean, it'll help your posture. Well, here's the question. Does the chair have armrests?
No.
Oh, well then, yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah, so I have an office chair, but it's a $50 one that I got at, like, Office Max that is disintegrating. And I want to replace it, but what I want to replace it with is a fancy Aeron chair like I used to have when I worked at Sony.
You should do that.
But that's $1,200.
Well, depending on the size, you need, they're between like $950 and $1,150 or something. But you should do, like, Herman Miller has like a once a year, like 15% off everything in the store sale. You don't get those emails?
Why would I get emails from Herman Miller?
Because you like their chairs and you want their stuff.
But I'm not,
next time I get one of their flyers that says, flash 48-hour sale, I'll let you know that you can go get your Aeron chair. Because that's what I did. I waited till the Christmas sale to buy mine.
Yeah, because you have an Aeron chair?
I have a Herman Miller Embody chair. The funny looking back that creaks a lot. You hear it.
I hate that chair.
I have the Marco chair for people on the internet.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if he still uses it.
I dislike that. I like the mesh. I like the wire mesh. It feels like I'm suspended in the air.
I never found Aeron's to be as supportive as they purported to be, but that mostly was probably because I sat in Aeron's that were in shared editing bays and were probably set up poorly or the wrong size or something. I hear they're very nice chairs, but if I was going to spend that much money on a tactical chair again, I would buy a Steelcase chair because that's what I had at my desk at Intel, and they are very ugly chairs, but they are incredibly adjustable and very comfortable.
I actually kind of like the look of the Steelcase chair, but not in a home environment. It's like the bridge of a sci-fi ship. It's not It's not a comfy, cozy look.
Well,
but
it's gotten nicer looking. They took the one that I used to have, which was just very boring. What did they call it here? The Silk? That's not it. Oh, Gesture is the new one. I had a Leap. The Leap is very boring looking, and it was very adjustable, but now they have one called the Gesture, which looks a little nicer, still in a very, like, cookie-cutter kind of co-working space way. But you can get fancy colors, you can design them all up however you want, and you can make it fit your decor or whatever.
Yeah. I don't want these ugly looking office chairs that are very ergonomic but unattractive looking, and I also don't want an attractive chair that is not going to be comfortable to sit in.
Here's what I would do if I had all the money in the world, and you'd feel free to steal my idea because it's a great idea. What you do is you get yourself an Eames lounge chair, and then you sort of lean back and luxuriate while you talk, and then you get a boom arm that just sort of hovers the microphone over your face.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Another thing I was thinking about is maybe I should just get a standing desk, but I don't think I could stand the entire time during the podcast.
You don't want to do that. Once or twice I have stood up in the middle of a show and then maybe sat back down, probably because it was exorbitantly hot in my office. But yeah, you can't do it for very long, and you got to stand very still so you're by your microphone, so you kind of lose the benefit of being able to move and stuff.
Yeah. But one thing though about this glorious situation is that at work I got them to replace my office chair. I had something that was incredibly uncomfortable, but it was standard, except over time it like kept getting worse because it was, you know, an inexpensive chair. They finally replaced it. But let me send it to you. It is not great aesthetically. It's very comfortable to sit in. It's not as good as an Aeron chair, but it costs.
You look like a dentist receptionist.
Yeah, like it's a very inexpensive chair that has a mesh back, but a very firm foam cushion from Tempur-Pedic, and there's so much black plastic. It is not something you would want in your home. But I considered, like, well, I don't have guests here. I would just be the one who has to look at it. Am I worth that consideration, that vanity consideration, over just sitting in this ugly thing?
You could drape a couch cushion over it or something when people come by.
It is so hideous. For anyone who wants to look that up at home, it is the Tempur-Pedic TP9000. Because what great things don't have TP in the name? But
the TP stands for toilet paper.
Yeah, you sit on it. But
oh, see, look, this steel case Leap starts at $998. Boom.
That's
perfect.
I want like sub $400.
Oh, you're not going to get a good chair for less than $800.
I feel like the universe deserves to have
the
one.
Universe deserves it. Has anyone in Silicon Valley disrupted chairs yet? Because does anyone make, like, shipped to your door in a box office chairs? Because this is an opportunity. You lose all the overhead of the large factories, the warehouses and things.
Yes. I'm not aware. I know that they'll send you a couch, which I feel like is an enormous investment, but maybe somebody will do office chairs, because I want something that looks decent, and I want it to be fairly inexpensive, and I want it to also not cause me any pain if I sit in it for a long period of time, which is just not compatible. Like, it feels like it's the triangle thing. It's like you can get two of those unless you spend $1,200, and even then I would say that an Aeron chair is not great for home aesthetics, but I kind of like the silver gray one that they have. It's not so bad.
The silver gray. I thought they were all black except for the base could be shiny chrome.
No. They added colors, but the colors cost
this
more.
Of course they do.
Years ago. But if you go to the Herman Miller, wait.
Oh, look at that. That's not bad. I like the gray.
How did you not know this if you get Herman Miller emails constantly?
Oh, I don't. I throw them away. I don't look at them.
So then, what's the point of getting the email?
Most of the advertisements have like the goofy looking mirror chair, the one that looks like a big butt or something.
Yeah.
Or the Sayl. That one's very popular in architecture magazines because it looks like, I don't know, a bridge in Sydney or something.
Yeah, they're all just hideous. The Canvas Vista, also hideous.
Canvas Vista.
It's on their homepage right now.
We should get an Eames executive chair. What was I looking up here? Oh, the gesture. How much is the gesture? No, it's one, again, this is one of those things that I bought this chair, which, you know, I was taking a gamble because I had never seen one in person before when I moved back here and became self-employed, because I knew I was going to be at home all of the time sitting in this chair, and I needed a chair that didn't suck because I was used to the steel case thing at work. So I was okay with, you know, spending $1,000 because I knew I was going to keep the chair for 10 years, but, you know, it's nice looking, in my opinion. It's not as comfortable as some of the uglier chairs, but what are you going to do?
Yeah.
I hate the armrests on this chair. I will say that, though. They are adjustable in only two directions and pretty much very blunt adjustments, and I don't like it.
Yeah, because it needs to be adjustable. I need to have armrests, and they need to be adjustable. You can't have unadjustable or poorly adjustable armrests. Like the office chair that I, the crummy one that was replaced, it had no adjustment at all on it. And then
that's just unacceptable.
Some of the other office chairs nearby were the kind that only go up and down, but have no control over like how far they sit from your body, basically. So you could like put them up and then kind of have your elbow at a weird angle, or you could put them down and then you'd have your arms basically, because your elbow would not, it would be like barely touching it, then your arms would be spaced out like arms akimbo. It was a very weird design. I didn't care for
it. Yeah, it's not good.
No, because these
ones go up and down and they go in and out, but I think there's only like four settings in and out, and I usually keep them close. But the thing that drives me nuts that I used to have on the steel case is that they would pivot, so you could go like front in or back in and angle them out, because I used to have one of them angled, I don't know, either in or out, so like when I was Wacom tableting, it would still be supporting my arm at the angle while the other one was still straight, but I can't do that with this stupid chair.
Mm-hmm. Oh, speaking of Wacom tablets, did you see that there's a entry-level Cintiq now?
Was this a month or two back?
And I think it just came out recently, or is on sale now. I saw a review for it today, and it's $649.
Oh, the 16-inch guy here. Yeah, I think I saw this.
And it's HD resolution, 15.6-inch display. So it's 1920x1080. It's so chintzy and weird and bad, and the display sucks, but they took all the buttons off, and it doesn't do touch gestures, which is okay, because I don't like the touch gestures on the Intuos.
I don't
Intuos,
like it either. But I still have the Intuos 4, so I don't have the multi-touch one.
Yeah, I got the multi-touch one at work, and I had to turn it off, and then every time they upgrade my computer, I have to go back into the Wacom settings and disable that. But if you would probably want to have that if you were using certain operating systems you wanted to use a Cintiq like an iPad, where you could actually pinch to zoom and see what you're doing, as opposed to on an Intuos where you're just casually brushing your hand against it and doing all kinds of unwanted things. But I don't understand who this product is for, because $649 is not inexpensive, but it seems like you get such a horrible display for that.
At that size, you'd almost be willing to compromise and get an iPad Pro and then just use one of those stupid little dongle thingies. What are those called?
The Astro Bling Luna Pad stuff?
Lunar Display and Astro Pad is an app, but I think Lunar Display is a separate thing.
Mm-hmm. It has that little nubbin.
That seems fun. I don't know, maybe it's just that I've gotten used to looking forward while my hand is touching the desk, but I don't know that I really want to look at what my pen is touching so much, unless I have the ability to zoom way, way in on the display, because I don't want my hand covering the stuff that I'm manipulating.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, it really depends, because I'm well-versed in Intuos tablets, because I'm an old man like you. And for me, there's no mental barrier at all. Just sit me down at a workstation with an Intuos in front of me, and I'll go to town. I know how to operate that while looking at the screen. Don't need to look down for anything. With the iPad, I recently charged it, and I was playing with the iPad Pro 10.5-inch that I have with the first-generation Apple Pencil, so I remember to charge the pencil. Stupid thing. And I didn't have the adapter or any of that stuff, so I had to stab it into the thing and then precariously balance it on the edge of a coffee table, because if I put it flat on the coffee table, then it would stick out enough that it would push up on the push the iPad up a little, and I didn't really want to exert that tension on the tiny little piece of plastic that holds the thing in. But there's neither here nor there. I was drawing with it, and they've made some improvements to Procreate, so it's much better to draw in now. But I still don't like the frictionless feeling of drawing on the glass that they have, as opposed to if you draw on like a Cintiq, it kind of has the textured, rougher plastic feel to it. So you get more resistance when you're like using your Intuos.
Yeah, I feel like I've rubbed a lot of my resistance away, though, because my tablet is very old, and I am long overdue on changing my nib on my pen here. So it's probably not substantially different than drawing on an iPad. But I also have the like extra fat grippy adapter on here. I would never be able to hold anything as thin as an Apple Pencil for that period of time.
No, my hand started to cramp up. I know that
it's a very bad design for professionals. I don't want to bag on Apple entirely, because I like their products. I like the idea of the Apple Pencil, but just like, no, try using that for 10 hours. Like, there's no way.
No, I know they sell, like, you can get a big foamy grip thing that you can put on the Apple Pencil. Mm-hmm. I feel like that defeats a lot of the purpose of it, but
especially the new one, because you wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah, because then you can't use the capacitive charging on that one, which is the whole point.
The only way to charge it, right?
Yes, that is the only way to charge it. You have to take off anything you put on it that would interfere with that charging. There's no plug.
Sweet self, own Apple.
Mm. Well, what's nice is they introduced some new iPads that are very affordable for you. And
is that nice? Is that what that is?
I don't think that's nice.
An iPad Mini in the house. We don't use it.
Well, I mean, the iPad Mini, Jason's talked about every now and then. He'll just be like, oh, I'm going on a trip. What if I had an iPad Mini? And I'm like, please don't buy that one. So old. Please don't do that.
What if you had an iPhone XS Max? It's the same thing.
He doesn't want that. But
I like mine.
Okay. I mean, there's different strokes for different folks. But now that they've updated it, I don't think he's going to actually buy one. The iPad Air is the weird one, where it's like sort of like the old
Pro
that I have.
5 Pro.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of like the one that I have, but they just put Air on the end of it. which I find amusing, because it's like, what does Air mean in the Apple product lineup?
It was
lineup?
Demoted to an Air.
Yeah, because they didn't have one before. They were just still selling the old iPad Pro that...
Oh, wait, did the Air go away, or was the Air renamed just straight iPad? I forget what happened there.
The Air went away, and they had, for a while, just the iPad and the two Pros. I think that was the product arrangement before yesterday, as far as I remember. But the Pencil support came to the entry level iPad last year or something. I don't remember. When they last updated it. But it's again the first gen. So the only ones that can use the fancy Pencil are the two Pro models on the high end. And so it didn't really make sense that they also sold the 10.5-inch Pro, the old one that I have, alongside those, in Apple fashion of having the old model still hanging around. So they seem to have decided that Air means not quite as good as Pro, I guess. But it exists as something that you can buy. It's I don't know if it necessarily clarifies anything. And I don't know why you want to still sell that bad pencil. Or at least they could have revised the pencil.
Everyone got excited that you got your Logitech crayon, which is a big fat orange looking thing.
I don't want that one.
Yeah, I don't know what the advantage is to that other than that it's kind of kitschy or something.
Yeah, well, it's less expensive, and it is flat. Well, not it won't roll around on you. I'll give you that. But it's supposed to feel better in the hand because it's wider, it's more substantial. But I don't know. I don't care. I don't think it has like a tilt sensing or something like that. It has a couple minor limitations.
Oh, right. The tilt sensing. Yeah, I think that's right.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. Because you can't use it to do any roto or paint work that you do for your job. Because it's not compatible with that.
I'm still waiting for some product to just... Maybe it's a price point thing, but like, you know, the iPad Pro size thing with a Lunar Display type thing, where I can, even if I want to use it like a Cintiq, there's a mode to do that, but otherwise I can just like hit a button and it just turns into a Wacom tablet. Like it's a black screen, maybe with some like soft keys or whatever that I could program. Like, I don't know why that's not a thing. And like also, given the way iMessage has sort of been used to shoehorn in like screen sharing and stuff, like I don't know why remote desktop is not built into iOS yet. I mean, everyone still loves their VNCs and stuff, but it seems like that should be there already, and it should just be a matter of turning it on and letting us use it. Maybe it's a latency thing or whatever, and it's just not up to snuff or something, but then like sell me a dongle, do the Lunar Display thing, like make it simple enough that I can do that. But also it's just like at that point you're competing with Wacom tablets and Cintiqs, and you got to be as good or better, and they're probably not for the price point.
I would say that the display is a lot better on an iPad than you're gonna get on a Cintiq.
Like,
yeah,
I think I would primarily use it in like dead Wacom mode, not like Cintiq mode, but maybe like occasionally, because I do this stupid thing where like there are certain tasks where I will put my feet up on the edge of my desk and pull my keyboard onto my lap and then just use the mouse on the desk. And if that was the case where I could, like, for a portion of the day, just turn my Wacom into a screen and do some stuff that way, I would do that, but then go back to putting it on my desk and using it as a regular Wacom again. That would be kind of cool, but that's not, like, whatever, $1,000 iPad Pro cool.
I don't know.
What's the big iPad Pro cost these days?
Just the largest model entry level?
Yeah.
I don't know.
$999. Look at that.
Wait, no, that's not the biggest one. That's not the 12-inch.
12.9-inch iPad Pro?
It's $999.
Oh, wait, this says from $799. What did I just click on that said from $999? What's going on with your website here, Apple? Yeah, 12.9-inch display from $999.
Okay. But I think that's the one that only has like 64 gigs of storage or something. Or 32 or whatever. I don't know. Something small?
Yeah, 64.
Okay.
Also, it's got the camera hump. That wouldn't work.
Well,
so then I would have to set my iPad Pro on something.
Well, the camera hump surprisingly doesn't bother me because it's on the 10.52. It is weird putting it down on a surface because it is technically not lying flat, but it's not. It doesn't like rock or anything. It's not so deep that it causes a problem.
How often do you use it while it's laying flat on a table? Because like I don't do stuff with my phone like that. That's why I don't notice the camera hump. But I feel like I might notice this one.
Well, zero times. But also, why would you draw like completely flat? Wouldn't you elevate it slightly so you could see it?
If I was using it in Cintiq mode, totally. But if I was using it in like dead Intuos mode, no.
Okay. Well, I mean, problem solved because you can't do anything worth crap with this stuff because they still don't have proper software support for it. I'm curious why nobody's really approached the sort of the visual effects problem of it, because you could theoretically have a lot of inexpensive roto and paint work that you could do anywhere quickly and easily on an iPad. But that doesn't seem like anyone is interested in that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the mirroring is like the safest thing, because then it doesn't really matter what the tablet is doing.
Yeah, except the touch targets and stuff in Nuke. Like, you want to try using that?
I mean, that's what I said. You have to be able to pinch and zoom to get in close and make that somehow fluid, but also ignore all of the arbitrary inputs from your palm, which I feel like is not going to happen.
I don't know. I mean, people do it with Lunar Display on apps that are not designed for touch. So it's,
yeah. Although, so, you know, touch targets, I don't know. Because originally, you know, when I first saw Wacom, I was like, oh my God, you need one that's the same size as your monitor. Otherwise, how would you ever touch these tiny things? And now I have a medium-sized Intuos, and it's for two 27-inch monitors. And I have no problem hitting touch targets, which seems ludicrous that a tiny, like, 7-inch wide tablet can cover however many inches that is, 54 inches wide.
But there is something about it where you don't have the certainty of what you're doing exactly. But
yeah, you would also, oh, that's the other thing. You would need the mirrored cursor on your display, your desktop, your computer, if you were doing it. And
well, they might have that with Lunar Display. Neither one of us knows. We're not going to do any research right now. So this is probably incredibly frustrating.
I'm looking at the
somebody...
Lunar Display website. It's just making it look like a second monitor with touch display. But
well, I mean,
if you're using an Apple Pencil with Lunar Display, does your cursor show up?
Yeah, but I don't want to ask these questions because then somebody is going to be sitting there frustrated that we are.
I didn't ask that question then. All I see, I'm just looking at all of the photos on Lunar Display's website and nobody is holding an Apple Pencil, so that kind of tells me something.
Does it? But the...
I have prejudged this product.
Okay.
Lunar Display, send me your thing and I'll try it on my non-existent iPad Pro.
I forget, how much is it again?
$80
oh,
for USB-C.
Not really worth it for me.
It's not inexpensive, that's for sure.
No.
I would be willing to give it a try, though. I do like the concept of, you know, because the Wacom tablet, like, I see no reason to ever replace that. Although, then again, I also run a mouse and a touchpad at the same time as my Wacom as well, just because I find some things work best with some operations.
Well, that's just weird.
It's not weird. It's ergonomic and it's helpful.
Okay.
It's probably mostly because, like, I command tab over to Safari and I'm just like, I want to use my multi-touch, like, flick my mouse so that it scrolls.
Hmm. Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. I would say that it would be nice if the Foundry cared enough to, like, make an app for Roto and Paint, except they just got acquired by another investment firm, so I doubt
Mars
they're going to do anything.
Fix all of this, though. They just hit rebuild for iOS, and then... Can you imagine running native Nuke on an iPad? Like, it would, you know, you've got your split view stuff there. You'd be able to move your windows around and stuff for different sizes, but that would be something. But,
Well, it just wouldn't work because so much of it relies on, it's such an old busted app. So much of it relies on things that don't quite translate to modern UI paradigms. But there's still bugs in that code base that, like, I wouldn't want to be painting something on my iPad with Nuke for iPad and then suddenly find that I have a paint stroke on frame 1 even though I'm on frame 50, because that always happens. That bug is still there when it just, like, gets overloaded with tasks when it's trying to, like, auto save at the same time you're drawing, and then it's just like, nope, I'm gonna put this paint stroke on frame 1.
Oh, when you're, like, rapidly drawing?
Yeah. It'll just be like, here's this paint stroke on frame 1 now. It's all done.
I don't think I've noticed that. I also have my roto nodes, or my paint nodes, default to paint on all frames, and I have to change them back to single frame when I want, because I do all frame stuff more often than single frame.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's I don't remember what I was doing a lot of when I decided that I had to have that, because every single time I did something, I painted on a single frame and I was like, damn it, you're supposed to be on all frames, and just kept popping on and off. So I set the default to load all frames.
But now you're unchecking that every single time.
Not every single time.
Okay.
Well, what I'm doing is I'm drawing three paint strokes and then going like, whoops, and selecting them all and then turning them back into single frames and then changing the preference in the viewer as well, because you can't just change the one thing.
See, what I wish they would do is have the checkbox for single frame or all frames, but that you could toggle it on for everything you're painting inside the node. So if I switch tools, like if I paint something and then I switch to the eraser.
No. All of your tools have to have independent properties because it's very customizable.
No, but that's not how I work, though. Like if I'm erasing something on that frame, then don't I want it to default to the frame that I'm on and be the same? So if I'm painting on all frames and then I switch to eraser and do one stroke, why would I want like one single frame where the thing just pops on like that? The default behavior should be changed. But nobody...
I got that with some dodges and burns the other day. Like, I painted everything, and it was great for all frames. Then I watched my playback. I'm like, that looks a little flat. Then my quick time stopped in the last frame, and all of my dodges and burns popped on. I'm like, yep, there they are. I just forgot to set those to all frames, of course.
Yeah. You got burned.
I got burned by the burn. Mm. I think this project was the first time, like towards the end of the project, was the first time in my entire life where I guessed which one was dodge and which one was burn the first try. I always get them backwards every single time.
No, well, see, I've got another problem where I'll use the smudge tool, but it's in the same stack as blur and sharpen. I never want to use the sharpen tool under any circumstances. But for some reason, if you like, because the way it works, if you tap on it, you'll cycle to the next tool, mm-hmm. or you can hold down to get the little menu and pick manually. So if you're using your Intuos tablet, for example, and you go tap on the thing real quick, sometimes it'll register that as two taps, and then you've switched your tool to blur or sharpen. And it's just like, no, just don't do that. And then you got to like tap again to cycle through. And then I just get angrier every time I see the little sharpened triangle pop up, because it's like, I would never use you.
You're bad. You should set your menu PY file to, sorry, menu PY, since apparently I say it wrong. You should set that to remap the sharpen tool to just the blur tool, so it's just permanently not a thing.
No, because then I would forget that, or worse.
We'll set it to remove the tool out of there then, or something. I'm pretty sure that's a thing you can do.
I'm not sure that's true, but you're.
Well, I'll figure it out. I'll write a blog post about it.
that'll be nice.
Remove default tools from your menu.
No, it would be nice if you could have some more customizability over like organizing that, or if you could even make some sensible defaults for certain things. But I guess
it's still far more difficult to set defaults than it should be. I like the way that they've you guys are probably a newer version of Nuke than I am, but do you have the version where you can make gizmos by dragging and dropping stuff between properties panes?
Yeah, it's interesting. But they still have the old method too. So you can still right click and
manage. Can do the whole that thing.
But I don't know. It's interesting because you can more visually see, it's easier to visually see what you're doing than the old system, where you just kind of had to guess based on whatever a property's hidden internally named string was for programming.
Yeah.
I
watched the webinar they did for live groups, because they occasionally email out, come watch my webinar, learn how live groups and stuff are. And I think I get them and how they would be useful versus gizmos and tool sets and stuff, but it's still very weird. He was doing a bunch of quick setups of making live groups by dragging and dropping stuff from other property panes, and that looked cool.
Yeah, live groups are great, as I've tried to communicate before.
Yeah, I don't know that I would choose them over tool sets in most cases, because I'm not sharing with other artists, and tool sets, just, it's like, it's the same thing, except I don't have to dig into a group to find all of the stuff. If it breaks, it just loads all of my tools right there.
Well, yeah, I mean, but that's the thing, is like, if you're sharing with other people, tool sets are incredibly awkward to use, because if you drop them down and then somebody updates the tool set, like, well, good luck. You got to go drop that down again and then reconnect everything. Like, you can't just update in place like you can with a live group, which is the advantage of that. But that is neither here nor there, because God knows what they're going to do with the company now.
I'm optimistic, maybe. I mean, they made some good moves in the past couple of years. You know, like Nuke Non-Commercial was a big thing that they did. I think they made a lot of good improvements, but they didn't really make any major product improvements, and they definitely didn't do anything quickly. So hopefully they can get back up on that horse and make some cool stuff.
Yeah, well, they've made, it's weird. There's long-standing bugs that are still there, identical to the way they are in the version of Nuke that you have, like with the spline warp that I showed you, where if you draw a shape and then you change to the little pointer tool, then you save and close the file and then reopen it again, it will default to you drawing another shape. Instead of defaulting to you manipulating the shape. So the first thing you do when you go to grab one of those control points is you're going to draw a line again. And it's the only tool that does that. The Roto tool doesn't do that. Roto Paint doesn't do that. It's broken. It's been broken forever. But nobody cares about fixing that. Also, the thing that I was talking about with the paint strokes appearing on frame one still happens. But they have made other changes that I'm not a fan of. They changed the motion blur, for the way that it calculates that stuff, instead of being the old motion blur tool where it was just like, here's a vector control, you can just say that's the thing. This one has more options for how you apply it, except sometimes it does incredibly strange things with the vector math that the old one didn't do. So you can run into because sometimes you can run into situations where it doesn't behave in a way that you expect, and you have to actually switch to the old one in order to do something. And to do that, you hit X, and then you type out the vector blur thing manually and hit Enter, and then it will drop down the old node instead of the new one. Because if you'll notice, the vector blur that you drop down is named vector blur 2. But the other thing that they updated in this last version was the lens distortion, and they took it from a pretty straightforward but clumsy-ish node into something that is incredibly bizarre. There's literally a string of math that you can look at for how it's calculating your distortion. And it's like, is there a mathematician here that is going to be adjusting this by hand? Like, why does this string exist? But
they still are dancing that line between artists and nerd tools, and a lot of them are very, like, I don't need to see matrices for my transforms. I really don't.
Well, I need to see the matrices sometimes if that's where the data has been dumped for the tracker. Because if you use certain tools like planar tracking tools, then it's going to dump stuff into that matrix rather than putting it into the transform controls. So sometimes it's helpful to expression that matrix up to the matrix fields on another node. So that way they can stay in sync, or you can copy and paste the entire thing. Because that needs to be there. And it's always hidden with the little triangle, so it's not a problem. It doesn't bother me.
It's just goofy. But before we get off of motion blur, I was going to ask you, I saw the new VFX blog. What's his real name? Ian?
Yeah, Ian Fails.
Yeah, his new website, Befores and Afters, which is a very good site. I looked through some of the old stuff there, and I looked at the old Iron Man HUD article. Do you remember that stuff when they did that years ago?
I mean, I remember the Iron Man HUD.
Well, there's a couple of videos in there where a fella, God, I already forgot his name, from the orphanage, RIP, was giving his Nuke demo, showing the whole setup for the HUD, and he said they used, you know, they were having issues with the motion blur making it take forever to render, so they created a switch node with a script in it that basically has, like, a particular threshold, and it calculates how this, you know, because they're all 2D animated sprite objects, all of the HUD elements, yeah. but they're projected on 3D geometry in the 3D system, and it calculates whether or not that given item is moving in Z space relative to the camera, and if it is, it clicks the switch node over to a pipe that has you know, motion blur, like time blur in it, versus something that just has like a 2D vector blur, and whatever their threshold is, they set that so that it's, you know, it predicts it appropriately. And I so want to know what that expression is, and I so want that built in where it's just like, computer, figure out whether or not this is moving in 2D space relative to this camera or 3D space relative to this camera, and make the decision for me, because I just deal with the longer render times because I don't want to deal with that sort of setup.
Yeah,
it's super cool. I really want to know what that is.
You had said this before.
I'm sure I have. It's so yeah. cool sounding.
But I'm glad you haven't made any progress on figuring that out.
No, I've never even tried to. I'm tempted to track this guy down and be like, hey, you offered to show the expression in the video, and then you're just like, oh, let me just explain what it does. Like, can you tell me what that was? Because I want that.
I'm sure they would be happy to share. The someone appreciates their work.
Yeah,
I mean, how many people contact you about the stuff you've written on your website?
Like literally a half dozen.
Yes, so you could be one of those half dozen people that contacts this guy.
I don't know if I could track his email address down, but I could probably track down Stu's. He used to, you know, be in charge over there.
Yeah, I know. Just casually name dropping visual effects supervisors. Mm. But that's
we know a guy who knows him. Who can text him?
I think we know several people. But
oh yeah, probably.
Yeah, we can also do an incredibly bold and amazing maneuver of ending the podcast before we just start rambling about different ways
weird.
To contact
about
people.
Chairs yeah. and visual effects for an hour.
Yeah, well, and pillows.
Pillows and pillows and chairs and VFX. Oh my.
Yeah, and the iPad and your skepticism of something that neither one of us knows anything about.
Very skeptical of this product, Joe. We'll see what WWDC holds to see if any new APIs open up some options for us, but I'm very skeptical of this product.
Oh, dear. All right, so on that whatever note, talk to you later. See you on the flip side.
Sure.